This is Monday, February 7th, 2005, and we are continuing with the hearing from the Water Resources Department. I'm going to pass the gavel to Representative Crump, and he's going to preside on this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You may also make a fuss over our newest member if you haven't
heard from him. Madam Chair, before you go, I just wanted to say I'll do my best. Thanks for having me, and it's good to be here.
Just remember, it's too late to leave.
I know. What have I got myself into?
Welcome. Good to see you all again. Thank you, Madam Chair. And we do welcome our newest member of this committee, Representative Mike Schaffler. Mike, anything to say before we run you through the ringer?
No, just what I said on the floor kind of sums up where I look at natural resources in general. In Oregon, in my opinion, we aren't taking full advantage of what we could, and I think we can do more and still remain environmentally sustainable and friendly. I'm confident we can do that.
Well, thank you, Representative. It's good to have you here.
That's why he's here.
Nice jacket, Representative.
He's thinking. Marvelous.
We like that. It's always good. And to tell you how much I like this agency. Director Ward, if you weren't listening to my show yesterday on the radio, you should have been, because I gave Oregon Water Resources Department a big attaboy. Congratulations. Because you have done good work over the last few years with less people, and you've given the taxpayers a bigger bang for the buck. And I said that. Yesterday we talked about the good things that government does, because I'm highly critical of government most of the time, but it's only fair that when government does things right, we should acknowledge them for that. And I acknowledged you for that yesterday. And so, with that aside, Director Ward, if you'd come forward and whoever else.
And today is a new day.
And today is a new day. Exactly. Just because I praised you on air yesterday doesn't mean that I'll cut you any slack. Great to have you here, Director. Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Phil Ward, Director of the Water Resources Department. With me today is Lisa Pearson from DAS and Debbie Colbert from our staff at WRD. And I appreciate, I didn't get a chance to catch your show yesterday, but I appreciate those kind words and would agree with them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You are very deserving.
Mr. Chair, I think you'll recall from our time with you last week that we worked from this blue notebook that I think most of you have with you, and we went through tabs 1, 2, and 4 in that notebook before we concluded our activities Thursday. We did several things there. We gave the agency overview. We did the program prioritization piece. And then lastly, and the most depressing part of the afternoon for me was the reduction options piece. So those are the things that we've worked through in terms of the items that you have given us direction to present. What we would plan to do today is to deal with tab 3, which is performance measures. And then if we have time, Mr. Chair, and you so like, we can go to some of the other tabs and work through them as well. But if possible, I'd like you to turn to tab 3. But actually, we're going to talk. Before we get there, let me go through a couple more things real quickly here. Whoops, that's not right. There we go. You should know better than try to run the machine myself. I just wanted to remind you quickly of something we talked about Thursday, the core strategies of this agency. Our staff, and one of the things that I've learned firsthand since I got there, believes very strongly in protecting existing water rights and protecting the rights of those folks who have the right to use water to do so. Another one of our core strategies, facilitate water supply solutions. We think it's important that we lead in this area, and we'll talk more with you about some of the things that we're doing along these lines later. Increasing our understanding of the resource. This is an area that obviously in times of budget constraint, as Senator Shields talked about a little bit yesterday or last time we met. This is an area that in times of budget constraint, we're often challenged to keep resources along this line. You described it, Senator Shields, as the map, the roadmap last Thursday, and that's true. We're seeing reductions in our abilities to create those kind of maps statewide. Next, it's a core strategy of the agency to facilitate voluntary streamflow restoration. Again, this is something we've had some success with in ways that the landowning community, I think, has benefited both the landowning community and the resource itself. And then lastly, we think it's extremely important, and there are a whole lot of people in the business community in Oregon that believe that they need timely and readily data from our agency, readily available data from our agency. And so that's a core strategy of the agency. On to the performance measures piece. And this is tab 13 of your booklet summarizes it, but we're actually going to work from the appendix, tab 11, and page 120, because as we understand it, we've been asked to pretty much present all our performance measures in our time with you today. So you're going to see everything that's there except for some of the detail on the screen, but if you have your book, we're under page 120 under tab 11. Currently, as you can see, we have 13 performance measures, and we meet targets for 7 out of those 13. I've argued with Ms. Colbert to my right here that we're actually so close on a couple of the other performance measures that she ought to let us count those as having met them, but she hasn't given me that leeway, so we're currently meeting 7 out of the 13 targets we have set. Okay. A couple other things just quickly in summary. We worked closely with staff of the Oregon Progress Board starting in 2002 because we really needed to do something in terms of revising our performance measures so that they linked more closely to the Oregon benchmarks, that they better reflected our mission and goals as an agency, and that they were not just counting widgets, but that they really identified higher level outcomes in terms of an analysis of how we were doing our job. And it's easy just to basically count applications in and out of the door, that kind of thing. Those things are important, but we've tried to link these performance measures to higher level outcomes. So we have two measures that are linked specifically to ballot measure 79, or to, excuse me, benchmark 79. 6 are linked to our agency goals and mission, and 5 track the agency's efficiency. So with that, Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do is, since you've listened to me all day last Thursday, I'd like to turn the next little section over to Ms. Colbert here, who's the primary steward of our performance measures in the agency, with your permission.
Fine. Go ahead.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Debbie Colbert, and I'm a water policy analyst for the department. And as Director Ward mentioned, we have 2 of our performance measures that are linked to an Oregon benchmark. So I'm going to begin with our first measure. By first just reminding you of Oregon benchmark number 79, this benchmark measures the percent of key streams meeting minimum flow rights around the state. And it's actually 2 parts. The first part is the percent of those streams that meet them 9 months out of the year. And the second part is the percent that meet them 12 months out of the year. And this data is basically provided by the department to the Oregon Progress Board based on long-term gauge records that we have from around the state that coincide with minimum flow rights. And as you can imagine, this measure is largely influenced by precipitation levels on an annual basis. So when we have high water years, you would expect that these targets would generally be met, and when we have low water years, they are less likely to be met. Our 2003 data shows that we're meeting these this target 65% of the time for 9 months out of the year, and we're meeting it 35% of the time for 12 months out of the year, and those exceed or are at the targets for 2005 that have been set by the Progress Board.
Okay, and this is performance measure one.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, they were just going over a benchmark that they linked to, so that's data for an Oregon benchmark. I think they're moving on to performance measure.
Okay, great.
So we have two internal measures that track our contribution to meeting this performance, this benchmark for the state. The first is our efforts to restore flows where they're most needed for fish, and the second is our water distribution activities on behalf of in-stream water rights. So this first performance measure is the percent of watersheds that have had flows added where they're most needed for fish. And it's a relatively new target. We created this in 2002 when we were revising our measures with the Progress Board. And when we talk about watersheds that need flows for fish, what we're referring to is a set of watersheds that we worked on jointly with ODFW as part of our Oregon plan efforts. And we looked statewide. ODFW identified watersheds where fish most needed increased flows, and we looked statewide at watersheds that had the most likelihood of water rights that could be transferred or leased in stream to benefit flows. And this measure essentially tracks how successful we are at promoting voluntary flow restoration in these key watersheds across the state. And you can see that in 2003, we were able to meet our target, and we don't have data for 2004 in this report that you're looking at, because for most of our measures, we use a water year for our data. And so I can tell you that we anticipate meeting our goals in 2004.
So a question for you. So you anticipate that the target for 04, which is roughly 17.5, 18%, you anticipate you're going to be able to come back to us. When will you be able to give us that information?
We could give that information to you tomorrow. It's we were trying to be consistent with the report that you've been provided. We have to report annually in September each year. So for consistency with that report, we have not included 2004 data, but we can get you that if you would like it.
If you would, that would be very appropriate. And also, why do you plateau out at 20% from 05 on?
Mr. Chair, that's a very good question. Since it's a relatively new measure, we wanted to develop a track record and learn what was achievable under this measure. So through 2005, we actually set a target that was a 2% increase each year. And then we'd like to have a couple years of data to look and set our targets from that point on. So plateauing in 2005 is essentially at this point a placeholder, and we would plan on adjusting our targets once we have a couple more years of data.
Yes.
What type of criteria did you use to set up where you should be going and what type of measurements to know if a stream, and you say ODFW identified some streams and you have, what are you using to make that determination that stream needs more water?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we ODFW, from what I understand, used a whole suite of biological factors for prioritizing and identifying these watersheds, and it included things like the number of aquatic species in the watershed. It included things like the whether they are currently subject to low flows and other biological criteria along those lines.
So essentially, Mr. Chair, Representative, we took ODFW's advice in terms of the location of the watersheds, but then we're the folks that supply and provide the stream flow data. So we're the folks that measure the flow piece.
Yes.
how much, where most of these streams are you locating? Where are they being located? Eastern Oregon, Western Oregon, in the valley, on the coast where you hardly have any dams. You're not taking water out other than maybe some irrigation. Small, a lot of the coastal streams don't have that much coming out.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have these high-priority watersheds distributed throughout the state. And the reason for that is that we went to each of our water masters, and they worked with ODFW to identify the highest priorities within their water master district. So each district across the state has at least some high-priority watersheds.
Thank you.
And we can get a copy of a map showing the distribution of those if you'd like.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, please. That would be good to see. Before we go any further, when you talk about adding flows, by what means are you adding? If you could share with the committee how you accomplished that.
Mr. Chair, I think the next slide is a good indicator of that. So we'll let Debbie start there, and then I'll add a little bit.
This next slide basically zooms in on the data behind this performance measure, and it shows you the voluntary actions through 2004 through the three primary means that we use for voluntarily restoring stream flows. The first is in-stream leases for up to 5 years. The second is in-stream transfers, either permanent or temporary transfers in-stream. And then finally, we have the allocation of conserved water program, which allows farmers to enact different on-farm projects or piping projects and put a portion of that water in-stream and spread the remainder onto new lands. And as you can see from this table, the majority of the action has been through the in-stream leasing program. It is over 80% of all the flows that have been restored to date have been through these temporary in-stream leases. And you can also see from the graph at the bottom that since 1994, the interest in the in-stream leasing program has increased each year, essentially, of the program and has reached an all-time high in 2004.
Debbie, who are you leasing from?
Mr. Chair, we are leasing from existing water right holders.
One of the things, Mr. Chair, I think we're finding, and I know you will have heard the same concern that I've heard over the years, you take water, you put it in the stream, you're taking it off the land. One of the things that I think has made this leasing program so popular is that it's temporary. But leases are how long, most of them?
There can be up to 5 years. Many of them are one-year leases, but then they come in and renew them for the next year.
So what we're seeing quite often is that farmers who are the majority of the senior water right holders in the state are beginning to use our leasing program as a management tool. They can get someone to pay them to put that water in stream during a time when they perhaps want to rest a piece of ground, or when they could use an infusion of cash as part of their program. And so we're seeing the leasing program really take off. I think because of that, it's a way for people to fit this activity into their management scheme.
And who's paying for the leases?
Typically, there are a number of conservation groups that work with willing water right holders. Those groups include folks like the Deschutes Resources Conservancy in the Deschutes Basin. The Oregon Water Trust works statewide. And then there is also a group in the Klamath Basin, the Klamath Basin Rangeland Trust.
So this is not state general fund money, Mr. Chair. This is coming from outside sources.
So what goal in terms of obviously you're adding more water back into the streams. So how does this measure help you get to that goal?
That's an excellent question, and obviously what we're attempting to do here is chart a course to getting water back in stream where it's needed. And what this measure does is It allows us to lay some targets out that we think are going to help us achieve ultimately the end goal of having stream flow restored where it's critical to the fishery. And it allows us to plot over time a pathway for getting there. So in my view, this is one of the more practical performance measures that you're going to see today in terms of resource recovery and restoration.
Yes, Representative.
Is there any possible, what can it happen where you've got an upstream lease and that water actually gets appropriated downstream?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it would depend. I mean, when we issue an in-stream lease, we define the reach in which we would be protecting it, and then we would protect that water according to the priority date of that existing right that was placed in stream. So if you were leasing water in stream and there was a senior water user, they could take the water according to their priority date.
And, of course, that affects the value of what people will pay for a lease. What's the likelihood of that water being able to remain in stream, given its priority date? And, obviously, senior priority dates are much more valuable to the folks that are leasing water.
So, in essence, what you're saying then is a lease downstream or a lease upstream, and you've got a senior water right user who typically will use water, that makes that lease less valuable. Because the likelihood of the water staying in stream is going to be less.
In times of shortage, Mr. Chair, potentially a junior in-stream lease could be impacted by a senior user, yes.
Is it your goal, and I'll get Senator Seals in just a moment, is your goal to have in-stream rights on all streams where any right is granted?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that would describe our goal. I think what we're attempting to do is target the areas where this kind of activity can be of most use to the resource. And certainly the folks that provide the funding for in-stream leases are not interested in providing funding everywhere willy-nilly. What they would like to see is leases occurring where it'll do the most good.
Okay, Senator Shields.
A fascinating subject that you've got us on, and I'm new, of course, to the committee, so I claim ignorance all the time to give myself cover. I don't know how much these leases go for, and I don't know how much they're spent, and I don't know what percentage of the farmer's income they might represent. And so, because I live not too far from Reynolds Metals, that made a killing out of laying its people off and saddling its electric back to the system, and could make more money than that than they could make in their product. It just makes me wonder, you know, can you fill us in so that we have the details and understand the details of these leasing arrangements?
I think the summary statement, Mr. Chair and Senator, I could make, and then Debbie can follow it up with some more specifics if she has them, is that it certainly wouldn't represent a lion's share of a farmer's income. What you would see here is a little supplemental income that's useful to a farmer and probably ultimately fits into his cropping goals for the current time anyway. I don't see it as something that would motivate a farmer to quit farming a piece of ground. More it fits his existing goals and the timing involved in this operation. Debbie, you want to add anything there? Do you have some dollar figures in the back of your head?
I should have a better feel for the dollar figures because that type of information is available online through other sources. I would be hesitant to give one to you right now, but we could follow up with some data related to that.
Why don't we plan to bring some of that information back to you? That would be, I think, useful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And follow up quickly.
Sure.
I'm assuming, just from my own kind of agrarian background, that part of this might play into changing crops, and if you were able to do an in-stream lease, maybe you could then rotate to a crop that didn't take as much water or whatever? And how much of that is done? I mean, is there a lot of kind of mix and match so that you can benefit both from selling your water back for a year or two and then go to a dry land crop of some sort? Or how prevalent is that?
Dear Senator, I think that's exactly what we see occurring. Almost never, rarely would you see the land completely unused, but it might become a dry land pasture rather than a streamside grain crop or something of that nature. So generally, and as you have known farmers as I have, they generally find a way to utilize their resources pretty efficiently. So generally there's some use occurring, but it is of a different type.
Okay, one more question. Mr. Schaff.
I'm new too, so I might as well dive right in. Somebody let me in here. Anyway, if a bunch of nice folks in an irrigation district decide they want to lease their water rights back over to the stream for fish and making it so the district can't pull enough water out to get the guy at the end of the ditch, what do you do then?
Mr. Chair, Representative, for an in-stream lease, if the water right is within an irrigation district, the district has to be a co-applicant on the lease.
Okay.
Senator Bates.
Just one quick question. And does this program involve also a more efficient use of the water? I know there are some federal programs, for instance, that you can tap into funds to do flood irrigation, sprinkler irrigation, which is, you know, substantially more efficient. It takes less water to come out of the stream, and then they're compensated for some of that sometimes. Does this program involve any of that, where you lease a little bit of the water, but somebody comes back to make you more efficient in handling the water?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that does not occur so much under our in-stream leasing program. However, we have a program called the Allocation of Conserved Water, and that is essentially the tool for doing the type of approach that you describe. In those cases, a farmer can implement some water-saving method on farm piping or lining a ditch, and then they can bring it through our Allocation of Conserved Water program. A portion of the water goes in stream, and that depends on what portion of the project was paid through public funds. And then the remaining portion, the farmer can spread onto new lands. And so that's the incentive for participating in the program, is being able to spread some of their existing water onto new lands.
Thank you. Okay. All right, we need to roll, so let's go to the next one, please. Oh, and by the way, can you get us the 04 numbers for here, too?
Mr. Chair, we'll get you the 2004 numbers for all of the performance measures
that
we have.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, let's move to the next one.
Performance Measure 2 is the second of our performance measures that are linked to the Oregon Benchmark Number 79. And this measure is the ratio of the streams that we regulate to protect in-stream water rights versus all the streams that we regulate. And the measure really tracks our efforts to protect in-stream water rights on equal footing to existing out-of-stream water rights. And I just wanted to mention that when we use the term regulated, for our purposes, regulation is any action that we take in the field that results in a change of use or confirms that no change of use is needed. And it was defining regulation in that way, it was an attempt to try and capture all of the different actions that our water masters take in the field. So if they visit a stream and they visit five water right users and they all are using water within the terms of their existing water right, they're not out of compliance, but we count it as those five actions as regulatory actions. So I just wanted to clarify that term for you. As you can see from this graph, we are meeting our target in 2003. In 2003, we regulated a total of 436 streams statewide. 190 of those streams we regulated on behalf of the in-stream water right. I'm going to switch gears and shift to our performance measures that are related to our agency's goals. So performance measure 3 is relates to our goal of actively upholding the state's water code. Performance measure 3 specifically is the percent of total regulatory actions that found water right holders in compliance. As many of you know, our water masters and their staff are responsible for distributing water according to the water rights of record. And I also mentioned that this is the same definition of regulation. Any action that we take in the field that confirms no change is needed or results in a change of water use. And what this measure really tracks is how often water right holders are voluntarily complying with the law. And you can see that in 2003, we found a 97% voluntary compliance, which fell just short of our goal of 98% compliance, voluntary compliance. Just a couple factoids. In 2003, our water masters took over 11,000 regulatory actions. And this ranged from one action on many streams to a maximum of 1,500 regulatory actions on the Umatilla River, which demonstrates how labor-intensive distributing water for special projects like the Umatilla Basin Project is. In 2003, we regulated streams as far back as an 1857 priority date, and that was actually on the Applegate River in the Rogue River Basin. We think that even not meeting our 98% voluntary compliance rate, we still think that 97% is a pretty high rate of voluntary compliance, and we think that reflects two things. It reflects having an adequate field presence, and it also reflects our efforts to get out and work with water right holders so they understand the state's water code and they understand how to comply with the priority date system. And so we find when we're out and we're regulating on an annual basis, pretty much folks on the stream know what to expect. They know what their priority date is. They understand how it compares to other priority dates on that system. And we achieve relatively high rates of compliance in those circumstances.
It's only 1%, but what would you attribute to why you weren't able to reach the full goal? Any particular thing that stands out?
Mr. Chair, it's a good question, but I don't have an answer to explain that 1% difference in this year.
Do you have, are you going to meet your 2004 goal, the target, based on what you know now?
We believe we're going to meet our 2004 target, Mr. Chair.
It's amazing, Mr. Chair, how neighbors help us make sure that their neighbors are helping us meet this goal. So we do have quite a bit of help out in the field in this regard. This is one that I argued with Ms. Colbert that she ought to let us claim we had met the target on. But it is, I think it is a good indicator that people understand how the water system works here in this state.
Yep.
They understand who water masters are. People in rural Oregon do. And they understand that they need to comply with that law. So we're thrilled, frankly, that as we check on whether there's compliance, we're finding it.
And do you have a definition of variance, and how you use that in this process? It's a word that's used a lot in preparation of these documents in terms of performance measure, and it's something we're asking everyone to define for us. Variance.
Mr. Chair, we do not currently have a definition of variance or estimate any kind of variance in meeting our performance measures and goals.
It might be good to include that in the future. Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. And then the actions taken, did they vary from, were all the actions in 2001, were a lot of them the same folks in 2002, or are they different folks every year? Do you have any idea on?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is pretty similar year to year. There are certain basins in the state that we tend to have to regulate. We have to take more regulatory actions per year than others. And certain areas of the state we tend to have to distribute back to earlier priority dates. So there is some regularity. From year to year.
So generally, where water is short, Mr. Chair, Representative, then we're more active.
Yeah, you sort of demands your attention, Senator.
Thanks. Just want a couple of questions. Because again, I'm kind of rookie at this too. Not from the point of view of running irrigation ditches, but from the point of view of sitting on this committee, so bear with me a little bit. I would expect that a variance would be the difference between what your target is and what you're doing. So variance by its nature is that 1% in this particular case. And that would be the variance. The question is explaining that variance to those who are interested why you didn't make your target. So I think the germane question is you're off 1%. I'm not sure it's worthwhile going after at this point. You're off 15 or 20%. That would be different. The other question I have is I've never met a water master, but I suppose they're out there. And what I usually run into is ditch riders who are actually watching that water come down through the ditches or working with us on our sprinkler systems. Are the people that the irrigation districts hire, do you consider them a part of that team as far as working with the water masters, or are they completely separate from each other?
Senator, ditch riders and folks that work for irrigation districts, we definitely work very closely with them. And our responsibility is to distribute water to the point of the diversion for the irrigation district. And then once the water is diverted into the district, they are essentially responsible for distributing it to the different patrons within the district.
Thank you.
That's been a clean dividing line, Senator. That actually saves the state resources, and we deliver the water to the district. The district manages it within their boundaries.
That also explains why I've not seen them personally, unless I go up and throw a stick of dynamite in there and drill more water, right?
Performance measure 4 and 5 on our list of 13 relate to our goal of increasing our understanding on our water resources, surface water and groundwater resources. These two measures were added in 2002 when we were working with the Oregon Progress Board to revise our measures. And the first measure, measure 4, is the percent change from 2001 levels in the number of stream flow gauging stations that we operate or jointly operate with partners. The reason why we created this measure in 2002 was because since the 1980s, we'd seen a steady decline in the number of state gauging stations that we were able to maintain. And in fact, we'd seen a net loss of about 30 stations since 1980. So when we created the measure in 2002, our goal was to actually try to stop that decline. And in fact, at the time, our goal was to increase it by about 2% per year through 2005. Now, I point out on this graph that in 2006, you can see that we have a target adjustment. And that is essentially because we didn't meet our target in 2003. In fact, we saw a 5% decline in the number of stations that we could maintain. We lost five more stations. No, I'm sorry. We lost 10 stations since 2001. And so we proposed to adjust our target back down to 2001 levels in 2006 because we think this would be a little bit more realistic given what we saw in 2003.
And that's simply a matter of resources available both on the federal and state level.
And as Director Ward mentioned to you last week, this surface water data is very important to our department. We use it for distributing water in the field. We also use it for estimating surface water available for new rights. Our customers use it for things like sizing dams, spillways at dams or bridges or early flood warnings. So this is very important data to our customers, and that's why we created this measure in 2002.
So to use my language from last week, this is a piece of the map that you're throwing away every time one of the stations disappears.
Here, Senator, that's a good description. And it's simply a function of resources. We've seen a significant decline in resources at the federal level. We've been partners with the USGS for many years, the U.S. Geological Survey, for many years, and they have funded a lot of the work on these gauging stations. They've actually funded a lot of the gauging stations, and that money has just been declining as well as our own resources.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Phil, how indicative is this of trouble with aging infrastructure throughout the entire system?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think that's a good question. I'm not sure I have a clean answer for it. Part of it is definitely aging infrastructure. part of it is something of a shift at the federal level in terms of where they devote their resources in natural resources. And, you know, we're suffering some of the same type of effect in the snow survey program through the NRCS at the federal level. Fewer resources devoted to keeping this data up. We are of the view that this is important data, and ultimately the West is going to be negatively impacted if we don't keep up in this regard.
Mr. Chair, whether it's a matter of priority to the feds or not, it still represents, I think, the fact that they neglect the infrastructure, ages. We're in trouble when it catches up with us someday.
We will be. I think we find that with a lot of infrastructure.
Yeah.
Are we going to try to get through this whole thing today?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yeah, we're going to try to get through this today. I think that we're doing okay so far. Okay. You have how many total measures?
We have 13 total. We're moving to number 5 right now.
Similar to our performance measure 4, performance measure 5 tracks the number of wells that we monitor in our state well network. When we created this in 2002, again, our goal was to maintain 2001 levels of monitoring wells. Again, we had a concern about how many of these we would be able to continue in the future. And we use this data for, again, checking surface groundwater availability. We use it to resolve interference complaints between groundwater users. Our customers, like realtors and landowners, use it a lot. In fact, our well data has about 50,000 hits per month on our website. And they use it whenever they're doing land transactions and they want to look at groundwater levels. This is one that we count as being on target because we're within 1% of our target. The next two performance measures relate to our goal to equip citizens with information. The first is the percent of water management data sets that we collect and put on the Internet. And the second, number 7, is the number of times data was accessed through the department's Internet site. We place a very high priority on providing data on our website in a manner that's most user-friendly and accessible. We have exceeded targets for both of these measures since the year 2000.
There's quite an increase if you look at the numbers on the second page. I mean, you're going from 681 to 1,000,003.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. What's interesting about this is that these two measures are very closely linked. It appears to us that the more data that we put on our website, and because those data sets are linked, it's kind of an exponential increase in how much our customers use the data, because it becomes even more useful as we add more.
Again, Mr. Chair and members, this is one of the ways that, as an agency, you remember last week I showed you the FTE decline in the last decade. This is one of the ways that we've dealt with that. Most of these data hits represent someone who would have been calling and talking to staff. And so we've allowed people to work more independently using the Internet. It's made me a believer.
Our next measure, number 8, is related to our goal to promote solutions to water supply problems, and it is the percent of protested water use applications that we resolve informally. And this measure demonstrates our effectiveness at using alternative dispute resolution. Just to remind you, when we issue a new water use or a transfer proposed final order, third parties or applicants can protest that proposed decision by the department and can pursue a contested case hearing to resolve their protest. What we try to do is work with all the parties and resolve it out of court. We look at contested cases and other court proceedings as timely and expensive for most of the parties involved, and so we try to bring resolution outside of that legal setting. And we've been relatively successful. We have about an 80% average since 1998. We're not meeting our goal of 95% of all protests resolved informally, but we have maintained that target just to remind ourselves that this we place a very high priority on attempting to resolve these protests.
Neighbors concerned too, come into this one like you had a while back, environmental groups.
Mr. Chair, it includes neighbors that may have concerns over a new water use, or they may have concerns over another user's transfer of the water. It includes third parties like conservation groups, and it also can include the applicant themselves if they don't agree with our determination.
Probably a good example of this is a recent situation we had in Harney County, where the Mount Hare Wildlife Refuge had applied for some winter water rights, and the county itself had protested their application. We worked pretty hard with the county over a period of some months and with the refuge to negotiate out those differences, and what we ended up with was a settlement agreement between the Mount Hare National Wildlife Refuge and Harney County that subordinated a bunch of the refuge's water right that they were being granted to future economic development uses in the county. It was, frankly, in our view, a real win for the county. The refuge worked with us and with them to come to something the county could live with. Thus, the county was able to drop its protest. That's the kind of thing we're talking about here, a way to keep us all out of court, because, as you all know, that costs a lot more money and wastes a lot of time.
During this process, can you protest something for any reason you want at any time during the process or after you've come down with a finding and grant the applicants go ahead and say, yes, you can use this water? Can somebody come up with any other thing at all and protest for that? Or is there a raise it or waive it clause in this process anywhere?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are definitely prescribed time frames for everything you can do in this process. It's a very prescribed process from a legal standpoint. So there were folks at the 11th hour that wanted to get in on this Mount Hare Wildlife Refuge issue we're talking about and could not because they were not parties to the contested case.
And we would just mention one last thing. We think it will be something to track into the future, our performance under this measure, given the fact that a lot of our surface water is fully allocated during non-winter months and people are more and more concerned with how water is being used and transferred. We anticipate that our performance under this may become even less, given that these are becoming more contentious and more complex issues to resolve. Our remaining measures track our department's efficiency, and there are five of those that I'll just walk through quickly with you. Performance measure 9 is the average number of days from the time that a municipality or irrigation district submits a water management plan to us to the time that we issue a preliminary review. And as you can see, we created this in 2002, and you can see that we are not meeting our targets. In 2003, we took 420 days for us to issue a preliminary review. And what
you could have fudged a lot. Nobody in the room would have known.
Who would have known? Chair.
We're honest.
There is good news coming on.
All right. We're waiting.
This 420 days really reflects a backlog of these plans that we have within our department.
Ready? Go to the next one.
So this is why we created the measure, because we were aware of this growing backlog within our department. And it's a good example of how we're trying to use our performance measures to, actively manage our agency, identify backlogs that are developing, and also use it in our budget and legislative concept development. So as this slide shows, in 2004, we had about 60 plans in our backlog, 45 municipal plans and 14 ag plans. And I should just mention that these plans are submitted to the department, and they identify things like efforts to conserve water, efforts and steps that would be taken in case of emergency to curtail water use, And for municipalities, they can be linked to their ability to grow into existing water rights. So they're very important plans from our perspective.
Required by rule.
That's right. So in 2004, in 2003, we had about 60 of these plans. The legislature granted a fee change related to these plans and also authorized a limited duration position. As a result, in 2004, we have finished the preliminary review on all of the plans in our backlog, and in fact, we've issued final decisions on more than half, which is, you can see, the remaining workload for each is less than half of what we were looking at in 2004. Along with this effort, not only were we able to deal with this backlog, but we've also done a number of actions to streamline our process. We also have been working with municipalities and districts to try and develop better guidance. So it's easier for them to give us good plans, which means we can review them a lot faster.
Thank you. We passed something out of here 2 years ago that created a second queue. Did that have an impact on this? Hiring out somebody else outside the department if you have the money and resources to do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are not currently using that new tool called reimbursement authority for water management plan reviews. We could in the future. I'm going to give you a brief recap of our actions under that program in just a few minutes. We haven't used this program yet, but we could. We could.
But it was, Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, it was the direct action of this committee last session that enabled us to get a handle on the backlog, because you did provide a small fee increase relative to this program, was supported by the user community, and that allowed us to hire someone temporarily to dedicate to getting this program in shape. Now, Debbie actually organized a little strike force group out of our own agency that we put together a group of people because this was unacceptable that we were 420 days before we were getting back to people after they turn these kind of things in. And that group that Debbie put together along with this one dedicated employee was able to knock this backlog back. And it's our belief now we're going to be able to continue to meet the 90-day period that is our target for turning these plans around to folks.
In fact, over the last several months, all of the plans that have been submitted to us have been reviewed in less than the 90-day target. Other measures that track our efficiency and workload over time is Performance Measure 10. This is the number of water rights administered per state FTE. And as the number of water rights continues to grow each year, we are seeing this kind of shifting workload issue within the department. Over the last decade, we've approved something like 19,000 new water rights, so a 30% increase in water rights, with a 15% decrease in staff. So recognizing this trend, in 2002 we created this measure, which was the target was to get back down to something along the lines of 2001 levels. So in this case, you actually want to be below the target for this measure, and you can see that we're not meeting our target in 2003.
Run that by me one more time. Why is that number bad that you got all this work done by the number of people you got? It's like they're doing more work.
We have been able to use technology to keep up with this increase, but our target is actually to get back to 2001 levels. We think that at those levels, we would be able to more actively and effectively manage all the existing water rights.
I just want to be sure what you said. As the number of water rights you review goes up, when we get back to your targets, add more FTEs, is that you're saying?
That, Mr. Chair, Senator, that is essentially how you would be able to get back to the target, to get below the target.
How are these FTEs, may follow up, how are these FTEs funded? Is this a fee schedule or is this general fund or federal fund or other funds?
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's a combination of general fund funded FTE, other funds through fees, and I believe some federal fund.
Okay.
But primarily, the lion's share is general fund, Mr. Chair, Senator.
And follow up, last question. I assume you're looking to be as efficient as you can in the situation. We're not, you know, in the present budget situation, we're not anxious to add any FTEs. We're not anxious to increase your, let's be blunt about it, your general fund monies. I mean, your budget's been pretty flat the last 3 or 4 years because of other funds and federal funds. Other parts of state government are actually taking bigger hits than you are. So just a word of caution there.
And Mr. Chair, Senator, I think we certainly agree with that word of caution. Developing efficiencies is frankly the only way in recent years that we've been able to meet the goals that we've been able to meet.
This is like caseload.
Exactly.
And Children's Services, you can spread yourself too thin, you don't get the details done, things fall through the cracks. And total quality of the service goes down when you overload staff.
And Mr. Chair, is that, or Representative Krieger, is that perpetuates over time, then obviously the situation is exacerbated. So while this is something that we're not enthusiastic about, it's definitely a part of the landscape today, and so it's incumbent on us to do the best job we can with the resources we have.
Yes.
I appreciate your analogy to caseload in human services, because it is. But looking at the bottom of page 135 on that, in particular, when you have a comment there that our staff rely on our water right mapping and information databases to complete their work more efficiently and provide technical assistance to water users and others. And yet, that's precisely some of what you're not going to be able to do because you've been constricted in your resources. You know what I'm saying? So this is something that's heading for trouble.
Yes.
I would suggest that probably each and every agency that we see is going to have the same type of data simply because the workload hasn't gone down, but funds and personnel have, and that's because of Oregon's not growing its economy and increasing its tax base.
Okay. Let's continue. Thank you.
Performance measure 11, another efficiency measure, tracks the number of permits, certificates, and transfer final orders or final decisions that we issue per FTE. And as you can see, we have been able to meet this target since 2000. We have had this target since 1997. And essentially, this measure demonstrates the efficiency of our staff processing these applications. And this measure is also a good example of how we are able to monitor backlogs and bottlenecks that are associated with our different application processes. And so we wanted to just zoom in a little bit on some of the data behind this measure and specifically zoom in on our water right transfer application workload. Again, because this demonstrates how we're able to use these performance measures to manage our agency and develop budget and legislative concepts. Since 1997, we've seen a steady increase in the number of water right transfer applications submitted to the department. And what this graph shows is actually the workload that's remaining at the end of each year. And you can see that since 1997, we've seen a pretty steady, especially since 2000, we've seen a steady increase in the workload at the end of the year. So this is, you know, a developing backlog in our water right transfer applications. In 2003, the legislature approved an increase in our water right transfer fee, and we also were authorized 2 limited duration positions. And as a result of those additional resources, at the end of 2004, we were able to process 40% more water right transfer applications because of those additional resources.
So, Mr. Chair, this is a success story that's directly attributable to the work of this committee last session, where you approved the resources for us to attack the backlog. We wanted you to know that we went after that in sincerity and had some success this year. We're going to be asking you to continue those positions as limited duration in this new budget.
And quickly, what's your historical backlog been, if you look back over the last 20 years?
Well, it's been nothing, Mr. Chair, to what it is today. What we're seeing today is a fundamental shift in how people secure water in this state. 20 years ago, people were largely able to appropriate new water when they needed it. It was simply a matter of coming in, filing for a water right with us, and they got it. Today, with the state nearly fully appropriated, and you may remember our slide from last Thursday that we put the state up there and it showed you just that little sliver in the Willamette Basin where there wasn't a full appropriation, basically, of surface water. Today, the way people are getting new water is they're transferring it from one place to another or from one use to another. So sometimes you'll see a farmer moving water, and you described the temporary transfer process, Representative, last time we met. But so we have seen this workload grow as a result in that change in how people are securing water today. And that's one reason we felt like it was critical that we get a handle on it now.
And another quick question for you before we move on. Is the workload for a transfer should be less overall than trying to establish a new water right?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer that, but I think it's a very significant workload for a transfer because we're required to ensure that there's not injury to any existing senior water right holder in that process. So that assurance of no injury is a pretty detailed and prescribed process, and that's what I think is the lion's share of the workload in the transfer process. So I'm getting nods from the technical experts behind there.
Fair enough. All right, let's move on. Thank you.
We also just wanted to zoom in on another related outcome, and this actually relates to earlier questions regarding our reimbursement authority. If you recall, in 2003, the legislature approved a pilot project that authorized our department to enter into contracts with applicants that wanted to expedite review of a water use application. In March 2004, we kicked off this reimbursement authority, and we developed three pools of qualified contractors to do the work for the department. They worked on water right certificate issuance, water right extensions, and water right transfers. As you can see in this table, that's the number of contracts we have to date for each of these types of transactions. And you can also see the range in cost. So the certificate was the low of $630, and the transfers were at the upper end of $1,400 to process.
And,
again, I mean, just relating this back to how we're managing the agency, we see this as a really good option for some of our customers, and we also think it's going to enhance our performance under the related performance measure that we have.
And again, we'll ask this body to consider legislation this session to remove the sunset from that program so we can continue it.
We have other measures tracking our efficiency. Measure 12 is the number of points of diversions per FTE of field staff. And similar to the previous FTE-oriented performance measures, the goal here, again, is to get back down to below the target. Again, we've seen an increase in the points of diversions that we administer each year with decreasing staff resources. We've been able to keep up with this trend by using technology and working more efficiently.
Question for you at the top of your page. You get out to 206, 207, and you're coming along at 2,200 and 2,000. And then you're down to 75 in 2006 and 80 in 2007. I'm looking at the top of your page here for your target in 06, 07. It drops from 2005.
137.
It's page number 137.
I think it's a typo.
Is that a typo?
Mr. Chair, I apologize. That is a typo.
Okay.
That should be 2000. It should continue. And again, this is one of those measures where it's relatively new. We developed it in 2002, so we wanted to get some a track record of data and then adjust it in the future.
Okay. Very good, Chair.
My apologies.
If you use those numbers, it's easier to read.
It is. I just attributed that sleuthing to our crack legislative fiscal staff. They caught that. They're not much they don't miss. All right, number 13.
Our final measure is related to the number of administrative transactions we process per FTE. And these transactions include things like accounts payable, accounts receivable, payroll, recruitment, those types of transactions. And we've had this performance measure since 1997, and we've been meeting the targets under that performance measure since 1999. I just mentioned that the Department of Administrative Services is currently developing a guidance for agencies to use for administrative process measures, and that at some date in the future, my understanding is that we'll be required to shift over to those recommended approaches so that they can compare across agencies' performance. So we will be revising this at some point in the future.
Okay.
And then the final thing we wanted to mention is let you know that we are currently developing two measures related to customer service. And these are under development for a couple of reasons. They relate to the governor's executive order on regulatory streamlining. And also during our last budget presentations, last session, the committee specifically requested that we investigate some customer satisfaction measures and develop those. So we have been working on those. DAS has just issued guidance, so we will be proposing them consistent with that guidance. We've been piloting two methods for collecting the data. We've been including a mail-in survey with final decision documents, and so far we've had about 80% of the folks that send those back to us have rated our customer service 80 acceptable or better 80% of the time. And we also did a survey in 2004, online survey, and we found that 60% of the survey, they found that they our information on our website 60% or more of the time.
Okay, quick question before you go. You're too far away from performance measure number 13. I wanted to ask you, if you go back to that slide, why is that flat line there in 05 on? Wouldn't you want that target, if you're increasing efficiency, wouldn't you want that target to be elevating slightly?
Mr. Chair, that's a very good point. In years prior to 1999, we weren't meeting that target. So for several years after that, we reached the target. We would normally have adjusted the target up this year when we were given the opportunity to adjust our target through the progress board. We didn't make any changes because we specifically were told by the Department of Administrative Services to wait for their revised administrative measures and then conform to that guidance. So we did not propose to increase our targets, but it's normally as we have opportunities to adjust targets, we would increase them, as you mentioned.
What were those administrative guidelines, what were those changes? Paul?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Department of Administrative Services, the executive branch, is working on a whole suite of some administrative performance measures where you can, in essence, measure the performance of administration. And the idea is, much like the same thing they're trying to do with customer service, is to have all state agencies use the same measures so that you can look across agencies and compare apples to apples. I don't think that process is as far along as the customer service measurement process. I believe that at some point this session, I'm not sure exactly if the co-chairs have decided how to handle it, but you'll be hearing more about customer service. But it would be my guess that at least for this next biennium, the department would continue to measure this particular performance measure, because I don't believe those other administrative ones will be in place. And and we can have a conversation, the subcommittee and the department, about the targets. And as I've been instructed from the co-chair, that looking at targets is going to be an important part of what the subcommittee does. So when we get ready for a work session, we can have some more conversation about this measure and others where the targets were left unchanged and maybe looking at revising some of those targets.
Very good.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm going to throw you a softball, I guess. Looking at these charts, that's one of them. There was something about 2001, and I guess probably has to do with money, but is there... Just looking back through on this measure 13, 2001 seemed to be substantially better, and there's quite a lot of them. There was a big uptick in 2001, like on number 11, promoting efficiency, and even going back to slide number 8, it seemed like that was a watershed year kind of in 2001, and I suppose that is the fact that we funded you fully and or somewhere or another, and you had to reduce all these cuts. Or is there some other reason, or what's going on here?
Chair, Senator, you picked out truly a watershed year. That was a year of significant drought. That was a year of significant drought. You'll remember the climate situation in 2001. A lot of this reflects workload that came in an emergency situation, where we are able to do things faster and with less process because the things that we do are temporary. For example, we issued a whole bunch of drought permit final orders down in Klamath Falls. That gives folks the opportunity to use wells in a time of drought that they can't use when they're not in that situation. So what happened is we had that tough water year, we had to do a lot of emergency work to make sure people stayed in business, and that's what that reflects. And frankly, it reflects a lot of yeoman's work by our staff at that point in time and kind of going above and beyond the call to make sure people got taken care of.
That was
wonderful.
Okay, and thanks for the softball. Your last slide, and then we've got to move on. We're running short of time. Okay.
I wanted to say just one sentence quick about the performance measures before we leave that. We've made, a sincere attempt in the last couple of years to make our performance measures real and meaningful. And I wouldn't say that we're 100% there yet, but I think we're getting there. And we're starting to figure out the type of things that we need to measure to make sure that we're giving ourselves data that will truly enable us to make the right decisions in the future in terms of what we're doing and how we do it. So, leaving performance measures, Mr. Chair, just a couple things in summary generally. And we talked about several of these things last session, I wanted to come back to them real quickly. This agency has experienced significant reductions, in our view, in the governor's recommended budget, and you can see the staff resources in the chart below as reflective of how we've been in a trend line. The programs that you've looked at in the last couple of days are truly what we would call integrated programs, and so there are very few standalone kind of things that you could reach in and take out of the agency that wouldn't have an impact on the other programs. An exception might be the Water Development Loan Program, which is pretty much a standalone program in the agency. Sadly, there's no general fund to get. We got the last $275,000 worth of general fund in that program, and so that will run on its other fund resources until such a time we should the state choose to really aggressively pursue that program again. So the programs are integrated. They impact one another. It's our view that this agency is essential to the economic and environmental health of the state. Both pieces of that equation we play a big part in. And again, I would just note that there's no federal counterpart to what this agency does. So there's not a federal backstop. We can't turn this work back to the federal government. So, Mr. Chair, this is the information that, as per instructions, we had prepared relative to this initial overview with you all. If you want to spend more time with us today, we can go into some of the other items, a couple of the other tabs in the binder. If not, we're prepared to stand down until phase two.
Paul, we have these other folks listed here. Members, is there something else here that you would specifically like to have Water Resources address for us? Senator?
I would like you to talk a little bit about Chapter 7, Service Delivery and Cost Containment. As you know, Paul and Mike from your accounting division spent some time with me Thursday after the hearing. One of the questions I had is, what is your bottom line in terms of your increasing costs, your hard dollar increasing costs in your agency this year? And that is not an easy question to answer, as I discovered. So when you talk about service delivery and cost containment in terms of how you deal with customers, the people you serve, and also at the same time within your own agency, and I know the two are very different, but since we're on that subject, let's talk about it. Welcome. For the record, Adam.
Yes, good afternoon. For the record, Adam Sussman with the Water Resources Department. I'm the Senior Policy Coordinator, and I think we were talking about Tab 7 in the notebook, Mr. Chair. And I guess I should start off by saying I'm not prepared today to give you a hard number, I think the kind of number that you asked for, but we certainly could try to provide you some follow-up to do that.
Thank you, Adam, and it is one of the questions that Paul and I are going to work on along with Chair Morgan in terms of understanding what your costs are that are in essence uncontrollable, what you know you are going to have to spend more money to do. And it's something that I need in terms of when I'm evaluating your overall budget. And once I reach that conclusion of what I think that number is, then we will get into the policy issues of your policy packages, puts and takes, and all of those things that are occurring within your agency, and see possibly then we might get a little creative as a committee in terms of helping you, making it easier for you guys to be more efficient. And maybe think outside the box, possibly with various ideas about how we can strive to do more with less, as you guys again have done a very admirable job as an agency, and that chart depicts that very well. So that is something that I do want to get to. But let's talk about service delivery and cost containment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look under your tab 7, you will see just a whole number of bullets, and I don't obviously intend to go through all those, but I just wanted to hit some of the highlights in terms of customer service. And some of these customer service activities, of course, are to provide a better service delivery, but they're also to contain costs. So I don't think there's a very clear line necessarily between those two. So as I talk about them, you're kind of thinking about both sides. And just really, I was intending on providing you a few highlights. One of the things that Director Ward noticed when he got to our agency is that it was pretty darn hard to get through on the phone to somebody, and was really interested in making sure that we had a live body that was there to answer the phone. And so as part of our customer service activities, and something we've highlighted, we actually have a live body answer the phone and direct them and help them until we find the person they need to talk to. The other thing that we do in terms of customer service, which I think crosses the line in terms of cost containment, is we have moved to providing almost all of our notification by email. Now, obviously, not everybody has email or is prepared to use email, so we still use other means to get our message out to folks. But we have saved significant resources by saving lots of paper and providing notice by email, and also providing access to the department's staff reports that we use with our commission online. The other thing that we have done in terms of customer service is we have worked really hard to make sure that we get our policy-making body, the Water Resources Commission, out of Salem and out into the rural parts of the state so that they can hear the local issues and they can hear the local folks come and provide input. And we have found that has been a huge customer service that we can provide the citizens of the state of Oregon. The other thing that I mentioned in terms of the rural parts of the state, and again, I think crosses the line of cost containment, is we are providing, where the resources are available, customer service areas within our water master offices all over the state, so that customers can come in and they, if they don't have the resources to access our databases from their house, our staff can help them get on the internet, access those databases, and provide the information that they need. And that's been a real great service. Just jumping to some of the regulatory streamlining activities, one of the success stories that we've highlighted in here is the use of the SPOTS card, and frankly, I'm not even sure what SPOTS stands for, but it's kind of like a Visa card, essentially, that the department can use for reasonably small purchases, and it saves us a tremendous amount of time in terms of processing paper and sending invoices and paying bills. And on the other side of the equation, the vendor doesn't have to wait through the longer process to get compensated by the state. And so that's been a real good process. Also, in terms of regulatory streamlining, I think as we get an opportunity to talk to this committee about the department's legislative package, you will find that of the six bills that the department has put together for pre-session filing, that four of those have been co-branded by the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, where we're working very hard to make our processes cheaper, faster, and simpler for our customers. And then we've also worked with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. We prepare a report annually, and we've demonstrated that we've initiated and completed 10 of these regulatory streamlining projects. Finally, in terms of program improvements, and again, there's a lot more detail in tab 7, the one program improvement that I wanted to highlight is our program related to the use of certified water rights examiners. And these are the individuals out there that may help one prepare an application, or they may help prepare a claim of beneficial use so that somebody can receive a water rights certificate. And over the years, our manager, Dwight French, in the Water Rights Division, and his staff have done a tremendous job of clarifying the rules that the water rights examiners work under, to provide them resources on our website so that there's a one-stop shopping opportunity for them, and to provide forms so that the information that we're receiving from the certified water rights examiners is consistent, which means we can process it much quicker, and it has everything we need. So that has been a huge program improvement that we've been working on over the last biennium. And so again, Mr. Chair and members, I've just hit a few of the highlights, but it is a big emphasis for this department that we are constantly looking at our customer service and regulatory streamlining activities.
Very good. Let me ask you a question, and this is really for the director. Sure. More than anything, but it really applies to all of you who are our department employees in the room. In your preamble here on page 89, you talk about, in your second paragraph, establishing a culture of streamlining and cost containment, and that this is key to maintaining quality customer service and getting things done in times of fiscal scarcity. How do you maintain establish a culture? Because by saying establish a culture, you're intimating to me that there wasn't a culture previously, and so now you're trying to perhaps create a different change of mindset within the agency. How do you do that when you year after year you have less people, and you are, as an agency, do you feel like you're under siege, or do you feel like, because you are being asked to think outside the box and use new technology such as your web pages for certified water rights examiners and so forth, do you feel like there is a commitment, that's the wrong term, do you feel like there's a willingness amongst the agency and its employees to look beyond the reductions that they've had to deal with and say, yeah, we can meet our mission if the legislature will work within certain areas sort of like what we did by providing you with additional resources to reduce your backlog. Do you think that you can establish a culture that says, yeah, let's think outside the box and do these things?
Mr. Chair, it was apparent to me when I came to this agency just 2 years ago now that we're heavy on process. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that, most of them statutory.
Right.
And so I just would have to credit my predecessor and the work of the people in this gentleman next to me and the people behind me in the room as to having bought into the need to streamline what we do, to take a hard look at what we do, and just to see if we can find ways to do it more efficiently. And then I just would add to that, to make sure that we're serving, that we are responding to customers in a manner that helps them come away from their experience with us satisfied. So I think there's definitely that culture growing in the agency. That's happened for a couple of reasons. One, I think it has to start at the top.
Absolutely.
And that the agency head and the senior staff have to be committed to being people-friendly more than paper-friendly. I mean, we have to be, we have to follow the rules and do things according to the law, but we've got to do it with the people that we serve in mind. And so I think that culture is well on its way here. And again, I credit my predecessor for and the folks in this room for a lot of that work. We decided when we took a look at our opportunity to submit legislation to you all this session to focus that legislation on making our shop more efficient, and to give you all an opportunity to participate with us in doing that. And so that's the whole point of our regulatory streamlining package. We got a green light from this governor to do some things that really, in our view, make it easier to do business with us and make it easier for us to do business. And so I think that culture's being established. I think we've got room to grow because, like all bureaucracies, we're bureaucratic on occasion. But what we're trying to do, and I think, the example I'm trying to be a part of for our staff is that we respond to people timely, we respond to people respectfully, and we fulfill our statutory mandates in a credible and effective manner, but in one that keeps the people that we serve in mind.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. That bill I talked about earlier that established another queue for those that had the resources to do it rather than having waiting. One, you'd have to be waiting in line for longer without it, or we would have had to hire more full-time employees. How many days did we take off there, those folks' wait, and how many? And then we reduced the wait for these folks over here, too, and how many full-time employees extra would we have needed since you started doing that? Do you have any numbers to show? Because that's a good example of how you all became more efficient or more timely, more helpful, produced more product, and didn't spend any more money. Do you have numbers on that yet? If you had ideas like that to bring to us, that would be helpful, I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, there's the numbers of the people that have engaged in the process, but to just give you an idea, a water right extension, a transfer, for example, can move through the process. It has moved through the process in as short as 3 weeks for a temporary transfer and taken as long as, say, 4 months for a complicated permanent transfer, which is pretty reasonable in terms of time. In the normal queue, I guess I would just say it would have taken significantly longer. And in fact, in talking with a businessman who recently went through this process, who will likely come and testify before the Water Committee and perhaps this committee, he was explaining to me that the opportunity cost waiting around for the normal line was just not acceptable, and this was an absolute business necessity that he had this kind of opportunity to take advantage of.
Yes, follow up?
Yeah, I mean, we're just talking about the state side of this.
Right.
And I would, if you could find some
I mean, how many folks did that person employ after that? I mean, how much more revenue did we get because they did go into business or use this resource? If you, I mean, I'm asking for a lot, and I know I'm not trying not to create work for you, but you know, just figure out how we're saving time and money on our side, how many more people we're providing service for, how much time we're saving for them. We can come up with those numbers, but if you could just come up with, like, even the anecdotal side of it is effective and helpful to justify doing what we did, because I know some people were concerned about that. But and once again, if you can come up with more ideas like that, come here to this building with them, it would be great.
So much of that representative is difficult to quantify, probably,
right. Exactly.
Because it's a lot like politics. It's a perception issue that if an agency or a state is difficult to deal with, then that's a perception that's out there. And it may not be based on anything other than anecdotal experiences by people, but it is. It would be interesting to be able to see statistical evidence, and I don't know if they can quantify that in any way, shape, or form, but it would certainly play into the argument that regulations do impact business, and they do impact people's decisions in the business-making process. And it would be wonderful to quantify it. I don't know if it's possible, but it would be wonderful. Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's kind of a global question here on consolidation. You know, there's 14 natural resource agencies. The governor basically is looking at the data control centers. He's consolidating the data control things. He's talking about doing big insurance pool, putting everybody in a big pool. And the ESPs, he wants to consolidate those. What I like is just your perspective is, why don't we consolidate all 14 agencies? I mean, there's bound to be savings there. I'm not here advocating, because you know I don't agree with consolidation of ESDs or the insurance pools. I do agree with the data center. So I'm just trying to say, you know, 14 natural resource agencies. What can be done about that? Or I don't care if I have an answer today, but I'm looking for some arguments down the line. Is what I'm doing.
Mr. Chair and Senator, obviously that's a question that has been talked about in this building for a long time, off and on. And I think there are pluses and minuses on both sides. We'll work wherever you put us, Senator. What we've got is we have a very clearly defined statutory portfolio that nobody else does. And so whatever tag we have on us, this work is a part of some of the most basic statutory responsibilities of government in Oregon. And so this little piece of Oregon's natural resource management, I think, will continue to function in whatever structure it sits ultimately.
Can you see any savings at all in a consolidation process?
Mr. Chair, Senator, again, that's an argument that I've seen argued both ways and documented on both sides. And so I don't know that I'm qualified to give you a very clear answer. Can there be cost savings in consolidation? Absolutely. And I think it's a very credible effort on the part of the administration to take this data center consolidation and make it happen. And what we're seeing there is a very codifiable function that a mechanical function that can essentially be put together, and we'll see how that works. But I think there's some promise there. Is there some promise along other lines for other pieces of the equation? There may well be. I know that they've looked at some of the payroll functions, potentially consolidating those across agency lines. I'm not certain in terms of the current status of some of those look-sees right now, but certainly there are going to be opportunities that we need to take a hard look at in the years ahead.
I would agree. I think consolidation would probably cause a lot of problems with all the different agencies. But I mean, why is it good for one person to visit another? Just talking about flexibility, you need some flexibility in how you're doing things. We should give that to them. See, I think ESDs need flexibility.
I just Just thank you for your
attention. Before you go, and we're going to conclude here just momentarily, but in looking at your performance measures, are you entirely happy with them? Are there... Do you feel like you need to readjust some of the performance measures, or perhaps add or delete specific ones? And if so, can you be prepared to work with us before the second round to address that?
Mr. Chair, I think entirely happy would be an overstatement in terms of how we view our current performance measures. That said, I do believe in the last year we've made some significant progress in terms of making our performance measures more realistic and more outcome-oriented, so that when you're looking at them, you actually see a measure of something that's real. We'd be happy to work with you in the interim to see if we can find some additional opportunities. But in my view, I believe we've been making some progress there. And I'm feeling a lot better about our performance measures than I did some time ago.
Okay, and lastly, I know that Debbie addressed the surveys that had been sent out, and that's also in your customer service piece under tab 7 that we talked about. In those surveys that you do, you send them out, or do you hand them out to people who come into your field offices to do business, and what percentage of them are actually returned by people, and maybe we ought to measure that as a performance measure.
Bill, yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we started the customer service survey in sort of a phased approach, and the first approach that we implemented was we send those cards with each of our final decision documents. So we've gone all the way through the process, and the person has had their thing approved or conditioned or perhaps even denied. And we send that attached with that approval document by mail and ask them to send it back. We have received almost 20% of a return, somewhere between 17 and 20%. Which is not as high as we would like. And as we work with the Department of Administrative Services, as they're developing guidelines, they're providing a lot more information about technique, about developing statistical significance, and we think we're only going to improve in terms of where we're at now. As a second phase, we have talked about handing them out at our customer service counters, in fact, throughout our regional offices. But we haven't started that because we feel like we're really in midstream right now, working with DAS to come up probably with some modifications to the questions. And so we're going to wait till we work through that process, and that definitely will be part of our surveying process.
Okay, very good. Let me go to your order. Any questions, members? All right, well, thank you all very much. I do appreciate it. And this concludes our hearing for today. And by the way, tomorrow we start the Parks and Recreation budget, so you might take a moment. Members, would encourage you to look through their particular folder, binder rather, and look at their performance measures. We seem to be focusing a lot on those these days, and we will continue to ask questions. We already have a long list of questions to ask them about their performance measures. So would encourage you to take a moment to do that. And with that, thank you all, and we will see you later.
Thank you.
Money.